This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to Star Trek Discovery. I'm your host, Amy Nelson, and with me, as he is every time, the wonderful Pat Devlin. Pat, how are you doing today?
Good. Not much has changed in 2 days, because we literally just recorded our last one 2 days ago.
We did, but the listeners will have this in 2 weeks, so...
Yes, they will. So yeah, a little behind the scenes. Because of all of our, between STLV and me going away and everything else, we had to record these basically back to back.
Yeah. But we didn't want to miss out on talking to you. So yeah, we just did it 2 in 1 week. So yeah, I'm getting a lot of you this week.
Yeah, sorry. Sucks to be you.
But very excited to talk about, because listeners, if you remember, we had the short trek. So listeners, if you want to go back and listen to our original thoughts, that would be the Edge episodes 55, 56, 57, and 58. However, we aren't going to duplicate what we said there. We are going to talk about how the short treks fit into season two, if they did or if they didn't. Did we need them? Would we have been okay without them? How would the season have gone? So sort of, you know, looking back, hindsight, that, as they say, is 2020. So we're going to, yeah, talk about our short treks. So what do you think about this idea, Pat?
Oh, I like it. Actually, again, background information. I was going to text you, maybe we should do this, even though it was your choice this week. And then you text me this or and another option. I was like, oh, I was just going to text you that this morning. So, yeah, I like this idea because I enjoyed most of the short treks. And I like, well, we'll get into it when we talk about it, but I like the way it played through this season. Now, let me ask you, because we kind of felt the same way about pretty much the same way about them, like whether we liked them or not. Did anything change in that aspect after seeing season two?
That is a great question because, listeners, if you remember at the end, at the Escape Artist, once we saw all four, we sort of ranked them, and I put Runaway as my least favorite. And so after watching season two and seeing how it fit in, I'm actually... That has gone up because of its importance that it played in season two. It might still be, it might have moved from fourth position up to third position. And, but that would have bumped the Brightest Star for me. It's so difficult. So did any of yours change position in your ranking?
I don't actually remember what my 1 through 3 was in what order anymore. But Runaway's still a clear 4.
Yeah.
I still don't care about it.
Okay.
Even though it did, we'll get into it because we're going to talk about Runaway, but right. It, whatever.
Yeah. Well, let's get into it because the first one that was released was Runaway. And, that's the one where we meet Princess Poe and her big long name that goes, and listeners, you can just say it. And I will say Poe. and so we meet her and it's Tilly. They find out and we get to learn about her that she has comes from this planet. It's like a sister planet and it's hers and she's about ready to become queen and she's being hidden for some reason, Tilly doesn't tell anyone.
And the people who see them don't mention it.
Right. And there's the whole replicator and the food throwing and the cuteness there. Oh, Pat's shaking his head. No, not cuteness.
No, I mean, okay, yeah, fine. But it was just useless.
Yeah. So that's the runaway. So, Pat, did the episode enhance season two story overall?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I cared enough about it. Like, when we were watching her scenes later, I didn't really think about runaway.
You didn't?
No, because I didn't need that information to get to that point. They could have given me any single... Wait, let me finish. They could have given me any single throwaway line about this technological advancement she came up with, and it would have been the same thing.
Really?
Yeah, because the runaway wasn't... That was a throwaway line in Runaway.
But, okay. So, what I guess I'm getting at is if we didn't have Runaway, we would have needed a lot more dialogue on Tilly knowing Poe.
Yeah, or they could have just not written them to know each other.
But then Poe wouldn't really have had the inclination to help as much as she did, I think.
I guess. I mean, I don't know.
I think their friendship is what really got Poe invested.
Okay. I'll concede the point. I still don't care about Runaway.
Well, I'm not trying to change your
mind. No, I'm just saying,
asking, did that episode enhance
season two story? Had I missed Runaway, I don't feel like I would have missed anything important. I would just be like, oh, they're friends. Okay.
Okay. So it just would have been in the background and somehow Tilly knows.
Right. Both. And it might be the fact that I don't really care about Tilly either, as like everyone else does. So it's not going to make that big of an impact on me.
Okay. Well, I am going to disagree because I thought Runaway added so much. Like, and I just recently rewatched Such Sweet Sorrow, part one and part two. And so when they are trying to find a source strong enough to, you know, power the time crystal, and that's when Tilly was like, oh, yeah, we can, you know, reach out to Poe because she has a way to regenerate dilithium crystals. And when she went there, my brain just instantly replayed when a Runaway. I mean, it's, you know, 10-minute, 15-minute episode. And all of that came back and I was like, oh, yay. For me, it added to the story and it made it richer that now the dilithium crystal, that there was a point to it. And I loved how it fit in.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I don't know.
No, I'm not trying to change your mind.
No, because you're right. I get it. I understand, and you are correct in the assumption, in the assessment. However, I just don't care enough. My personal feelings, and again, it's probably because I don't dislike Tilly, and I love the actress, but I just don't like the direction they took her in general. And so her stories didn't matter as much to me as they would to someone who does like Tilly a lot, or even a normal amount of like for Tilly, but. So that plays a factor in why this didn't matter to me. But also, I think it didn't matter because we see that Tilly kind of friends everybody. So just telling me they're friends, okay.
Oh, that makes sense, yeah. Because Tilly is friendly with everyone. And
even Michael became a friend who didn't want to know anybody.
Right.
So it could have just been an extension of them showing you a character like, and then they could make some comment. She never wanted to use this to help anybody. And we fixed the whole problem of not having to see Runaway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess. And I don't know if Tilly would have done that either, her character, because the whole point of Poe hiding was because she didn't want anyone to know she had this ability to recharge the dilithium crystals. And then here's Tilly like, oh, remember that one secret you told me? I need to exploit it now. I need to do exactly what you didn't want me to do.
Huh. Interesting. I didn't think about that.
I didn't either till 4 seconds
you
ago.
You just said
but I'm not going to lie here and act like I'm smarter than I am. I just thought of it, but...
Wow. Yeah. Because you're right. In Runaway, she was not wanting, you know, this to be out to the public.
So that it could be weaponized.
Yeah.
So now here's Tilly like, oh, yeah, come here. That big secret you wanted no one to know about. I'm going to make sure the whole universe knows. So you can save my butt.
Yeah, and what are going to be the ramifications of now Starfleet knows about this?
Right. Probably none, because we're jumping into the future and we're never going to hear about it again. But in real life, there would be.
Right. Yeah. So just a sidebar about Tilly. Again, like I said, I rewatched, you know, some episodes. And Tilly didn't annoy me as much as on my original watch. I'm just going to throw that out there.
I could believe that.
I was surprised. I was really surprised.
No, I think if I watch it again, she won't annoy me as much as she did the first time, because I'm expecting it to happen now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like watch a horror movie and it's really scary the first time, right? But then the second time, you kind of see all the things coming and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I remember this.
Wow, you're
a bundle of joy.
Tilly to a horror
movie. I'm just saying, because it's the shock value. What annoyed me so much about her is I didn't expect those actions out of her, because I wanted them to write her in a different way. But now I know what's going to happen, so I'm prepared for it. That's really what I was getting at, not that she scares me.
So what information did we learn from Runaway that was, well, I guess you say it's not important, but what did we learn from Runaway that was assumed that we knew in the season two?
No, well, obviously, like you said, the being able to recharge the dilithium crystals is important. It's not important to me, but it's important to the story. And we learned that people on the Enterprise, in the Discovery, don't talk to one another, because five people clearly saw them and didn't say a word. I think it was five. Whatever. There was people who definitely saw Tilly having food thrown all over the place. Mm-hmm. And nothing was ever mentioned of it again.
Well, and in Such Sweet Sorrow, they were like, you know this person? What? And there were like three people that was like, why is this the first time hearing about it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
so
interesting.
So a microscopic organism accidentally gets on ship and alarms sound everywhere. Whole humanoid gets on board. Nothing.
Yeah.
And so gets off. And is able to get off without being detected.
Yeah. Right. So we still don't like Runaway.
No, I mean, I'm never going to. So it's that's not the point of this anyway, whether I like it or not. It's whether it was important to the story or not. Was there bits of information that were important to the story? Yes. Could I have watched this season without seeing it and been fine? Yes.
That might be because you're intelligent. I'm just wondering for... You know, like, because there was a lot of information that was assumed, I feel, that the writers assumed that everyone watched the short treks before we got to that last episode. So I wonder if that was an appropriate assumption on the part of the writers.
I could see that point. And I don't think that's, I think it did happen. I think the writers did do that, and I don't think it's right to do. I don't think it's right to assume people watched it. Although, being that everything is streamed, maybe it is okay to assume that. Because if you watch the episodes, why wouldn't you spend the 15 minutes watching a short trek? You know, if it was network, it was on CBS, then I think they wouldn't have written it to assume you've seen the short treks, because you'd have to physically get up and go to a computer and look at it. However, the last time TV was doing that, people didn't have cell phones that went on the internet. So times have changed now a little bit, that maybe it's okay to assume people watch them. Because I don't know anyone who didn't. Do you?
Yeah, I don't know anyone who didn't. So, pretty sure.
In our little community, everyone's going to watch it, though, I would easily assume. So maybe there were people out there. You know who I could see? Maybe this isn't the right thing to say on a podcast, but there's a lot of there's people I know that watch this not technically on the up and up.
Uh-huh.
And they wouldn't have seen the short treks, but should the network give a flying poop about them? No, because they're not paying to see it, so. If you miss something, that's your problem. I mean, pay for the network and you'd have no problem getting all the information.
Yeah, I find that if they didn't have that assumption, we would have got a lot more information in Such Sweet Sorrow.
Yeah.
That we didn't.
I can see that.
And so, yeah.
I can see that. Also, the constraints of the shows being, shorter runs now.
Yeah.
If you had 24 episodes instead of, we had 14 this season.
Yep.
If you had, that's 10 episodes. So that's almost double the time they have to fill on screen where they didn't have that here.
Yeah.
So they condensed the stories into two. It could have been possibly four episodes if it was a 24 episode season or three episodes or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For that part of the storyline. Again, I don't know. Maybe it is just me, but I didn't feel that I needed Runaway to get to the conclusion that they wanted me to get to, or at least satisfy enough of it to be happy with the storyline.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Well, we're going to rank them on how important they were to the season two. So we will move on to Calypso. And Calypso was my favorite. This was the one when the computer, the AI, became sentient and the lone survivor, basically she nursed him back to health and then was able to let him go.
Right. Yes. A little creepy.
And this was the one, 1,000 years in the future.
Right, right. And it's like,
and
a really...
everyone, do you remember everyone freaking out? What is this? Blah, blah, blah. And now we get to look at it and say, Calypso, does it fit in? Does it enhance the story? Yes or no?
So, okay. So this was this was my third favorite of them. Significantly ahead of Runaway, but also significantly behind Brightest Star and Escape Artist. Because... like, you're watching that, and you're like, oh, this is a cute little love story. And then you're like, wait a minute, this is really creepy. He's married. But anyway, of course it plays huge, because this is the whole point, right? Like, this is exactly where we're ending up, and we just, without seeing this, whether it happens or not, this leads us to the fact that Discovery is going to get left in the future, somehow, some way. Because it's the only way that could work. And you can't say this isn't important when we literally brought it up in almost every single episode after like episode 6 of the season. Once we got the data and got a little farther into that story, we basically talked about, well, if, in order for this to happen, then that's the only way Calypso can exist, or blah, blah, blah. Like, we brought it up every episode almost.
Okay. Yes. Yes. We are just on different sides today, and I'm totally fine with that. I don't feel that Calypso enhanced the story at all.
Oh, it absolutely did.
Oh my god!
It might not have been needed for the story, but I feel like it. Maybe it's just because we podcast, but I feel like it enhanced the experience of the season.
I feel like now that we know that Discovery's going in, and then somewhere we've got this future event. So yet again, the writers and the story is being boxed in.
It is, but it can easily fix itself.
I mean, it's an easier box to get out of.
Yeah, it's a very easy
make work.
The way they explained it out was they are going back and changing the timeline each time, right? But again, it's not splitting timelines. It's just changing the timeline. So they could easily send the Discovery back and be fine with it. Mm-hmm. Because they just changed the timeline and now Calypso doesn't exist. That's okay.
Yeah. But I just find it interesting that, they started Discovery, in between Enterprise and the original series. So there's this box they had to stay in, canon and all. And then we get Calypso, which is a future event. And now Discovery is now after Nemesis and before Calypso. So they're in another box situation. Because somehow Discovery's going to have to be left, and then the AI and the data from the sphere is going to progress and become sentient and save that one guy.
In theory, or Discovery somehow changes its past again, and it goes back without ever having Calypso happen. Because the mother kept changing things over and over and over and over and over again. We stayed with the crew through it all. She said, well, I went back and put it in your path, and I did this, and I did that, and nothing was working.
Yeah, but...
whether it happens or
I'm
not...
I'm choosing to believe that Calypso is our timeline.
No, they're all our timeline. That's my point. My point is they could write it that they get out and go back in this exact same timeline and just rewrite that part. Because that's what's been happening. Every time they jump back doesn't split a timeline. It's a single timeline that changes from this moment on.
Yeah, I get that. But they can't do any more jumps.
Then the crew doesn't come back. So we know they're jumping. There's your box, too.
Yeah.
I mean.
So even though Calypso was my favorite, I don't think that it enhanced the storyline of season two at all. I don't think that there was any information that we needed from Calypso to have season two story arc.
Maybe not, but it's a teaser for the fact that the ship becomes sentient and that AI is going to become sentient. It's a teaser that the Federation no longer exists because of that. You know, you can tie them together in some way. There's a couple things I think there that, okay, so maybe you definitely could have watched season two without Calypso and it would have been fine, but I think it enhanced the discussions about season two while we were watching it.
Okay, yes, I will definitely agree with you. And I love that you say it's this teaser. It's, it added this peripheral, you know, feeling to it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we could have been watching the end of the Federation right in front of us that was hinted to in Calypso.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know how that was going to end. And that brought up great debates and talks. And like, that's what we watched this for, right? So to me, it's important. It enhanced the season for me.
Huh. Okay. That's so funny how we're switching.
Let's see if we continue with Brightest Star. I think we'll be on the same side here.
Okay. So Brightest Star. This is the one Saru and Michael go to Kaminar, and Saru, we get to meet Serana and we get to see more about the culling and the lack of Vahari, and then Saru going and remembering how he joined Starfleet.
Yeah. It gets asylum really, but, it's absolutely enhances and is absolutely essential to season two, in my opinion. I think you can't miss this story. Because if you do, don't watch this story and then pick up in season two. And a lot of that would be confusing to you because you don't understand how he went from a prey species to what we found out being a farmed species in reality.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a rebuttal and I just really can't think of anything. I think the Brightest Star is very essential.
Yeah, I think you can't miss it. It gives you the story with Georgiou, right? Which I guess you don't need that, but it definitely
informs.
Yeah,
we don't need the origin story, but it is.
But it informs his character.
Context.
It also shows that he was the only one to like look into technology and stuff like that. So that's fairly important.
And how no one else did.
Correct. Yeah. And then to top it all off, you have the big reveal that the culling is them picking them off, and then in the season you find out that they're picking them off so they don't go through Vahari.
Yeah.
Without that, it up to that point we believe they were just hunted. Like they were grazing, like water buffalo were hunted in America at one point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You'd go out in the field and chase them, and that's why they huddled together. But that wasn't true at all. They huddled together in little communities because they were told they had to.
Mm-hmm.
And they would call down and say, we need Patrick and Amy this time. And then we'd have to go. It's not the same thing. So without this, you don't know that going into season two. Season two would be a bit confusing. Could you get past it and still enjoy the story? Yes, you could. But it would be confusing.
Yeah. And that we also learned that the Bawl had the major technology, you know, with the little probes that, you know, mark the center of every little, you know.
And when they show up at the end, when you know, we it makes more sense. I mean, yeah, we would have known they had the technology in season two, but at the end when they show up, it all makes more sense because you saw the Brightest Star.
So definitely essential. And then obviously the writers assumed that everyone had seen the Brightest Star.
Yeah, I would assume so. Yeah, because they changed course with the whole character and the whole race.
Yeah,
they literally changed the entire course of the race's history in the Brightest Star, and then carried it through season two.
Yeah. Okay, so what do you think about The Escape Artists and season two?
So I'm pretty sure this was my second favorite. I believe it was Brightest Star, Escape Artists, Calypso, then Runaway, but it has no
bearing. Oh, wait, let's give a little synopsis. This is the Harry Mudd, Jippers on a Beach.
Yes, which I'll be having next week.
Yes, you will. And so we learn that he's on this little money scheme and yeah.
Yeah, he's turning himself in over and over again.
Yeah.
It means nothing. It had more to do with TOS than it had to do with Discovery. It was a fun, great episode, but it didn't play out at all or mean anything in season two of Discovery.
Was he using any time jumping device in that one like he did in season one?
No, and even if he was, it was in season one, so you don't need it in the short trek to know that he has it or has the ability to use it. You know what I mean? So no, it did nothing for the season two. And then the short treks don't have to either. Like, that's the thing.
Right. No, we're, yeah.
These three of them happen to play into season two. We all kind of said it was going to, but there was never, like, short treks were not, they weren't Discovery short treks. They were just short treks. Mm-hmm. It was smart for them to tie them in, but it wasn't necessary. They could have done one about Enterprise or TNG or Deep Space Nine. It would have been the same. It would have been just as fun, probably, and then it would have had no bearing because we've already written those episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was trying to think of, could we get the escape artist to fit in? And so that's why I asked, was he, you know, time jumping? But there just really was no reason for it for season two. Which is, again, we're not saying that's a bad thing. It's just that was sort of the focus of what we're discussing. So, interesting.
Right. For the basis of this conversation, it has no bearing whatsoever.
Yeah.
It does play into TOS because the Android thing with MUDs or something. I don't really remember because I don't watch TOS enough. But I know it played into TOS somehow, and that's fine.
Do you think that the escape artist played into season one?
Just that I think people wanted to see more Harry Mudd and they listened to the fans. That's all. You know.
Okay.
I mean, it does show that he's still out there running cons and that he's not with what's her name. So he got away from her again. But that's it.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. What is her name? I loved her.
I don't know at all.
Oh, my gosh. I totally forgot.
But, you know, because that was the whole plot, the point that he was trying to get away from her. And they brought her and the king over or whatever. And so obviously he's away from her now, right? Because although,
or was it before? I mean, the time period on that.
Yeah, I think I remember people saying it was before, but I don't know.
Stella.
Well, that makes sense.
Listeners, thank you for screaming at me.
so yeah, but other than that, I mean, it. So I think they just listened to the fans. Fans wanted more, and that was that. So they wrote it that way. I have a feeling that that's why we also got the Brightest Star, that people wanted more Saru, so they wrote his origin story. Good for the writers. Huh. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. So one question that I wanted to ask was, do you like the order that they were released? Because it begs the question to me, like, we have the fourth short trek, the escape artist, that has absolutely nothing to do with season two, yet is the one that's closest to the release of season two, you know, the first episode.
Yeah. I don't mind the order because when Calypso happened, we really didn't think it had anything to do with season two either, right? And you still don't. So, any order would have been fine. I kind of like it this way because I didn't like the first one. Mm-hmm. Maybe when it first aired, I had said maybe it was because we were expecting something a little different and this didn't like live up to what we thought they were going to be in our heads. And well, upon watching it again, I'm wrong. I just did not like it. It kind of lowered that expectation for the rest anyway. It gave me a framework of what we were working with. And because it was only the two of them on the ship, when the next one was only one person and a computer, then we started to see people in three and four. So it like built up to being a bigger story, if that makes sense.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I kind of enjoyed it.
So you would keep the order the same?
Yeah. Especially because none of these really fit what I originally had thought they were going to be. If they would have put Brightest Star in one, maybe I wouldn't like Brightest Star and Runaway. Mm-hmm. At least now I only don't like Runaway.
So I'm wondering if, because the escape artist, if that was first, because that would have been obvious, you know, season one, because we met Harry Mudd in season one. And then we had the short trek of the escape artist and then moved to Runaway Calypso and the Brightest Star. If that would have been too jarring, because it's like, oh, short treks are about season one. And then bam, you throw us, you know, a Runaway Calypso or Brightest Star.
It might have been. It might have been, because I think part of the reason why Escape Artist works so well is because you know it really is not going to play into season two, or you assume so.
Exactly.
And so yeah, it's kind of just a lighthearted thing to end it off and move on.
Right.
Whereas if
I'm wondering if they would have put that first, that would have been too jarring.
It might have been
us fans.
Because instead of it being like a funny haha send off, now it becomes, well, what did that mean for season one? Now it's just, well, this means nothing.
Yeah.
It's fun. I like it, but it means I don't have to think too much about it.
Calypso and Escape Artist, at the time, we just thought, oh, these are just short treks, because we knew the Brightest Star and Runaway, because of Tilly and Saru, that there was a, you know, connection, obviously, to season one and most likely to season two. So Calypso and Escape Artist, it's like an initial watch with Runaway, it would be like, oh, that's connected. Calypso, that's not connected. Brightest Star, that's connected. Escape Artist, that's not. Like, they were alternating, you know.
Yeah, maybe. How, I mean, maybe that's what they were trying to trick us with, too. Although some people, you know, like yourself, believe the ship itself is a character. So it still connects you to the, Calypso still connects you to the character of the ship. So
of Discovery,
you know, and it gives you information on Discovery herself, himself, in that it portrays itself as a woman, but and most people call ships women. But the escape artist really, I mean, it was just Mudd, right? And he didn't play that major of a role in Discovery's outcome. I mean, for two episodes, but you could have taken Mudd out of there and put any other character in. It's the same exact show.
Yeah.
You can't take Discovery out and put a different ship in its place and it'd be the same show. You can't take Tilly or Saru out and keep it the same show.
I want you to rank in order of importance to the season two story arc. What is the most important, number one, down to the least important?
So we're going in. Okay. Can I do two different lists?
Okay.
I want to do importance. I'll do importance first. So importance, the Brightest Star is number one. Runaway is probably number two. Calypso being three, but I could easily switch those, and far behind is the escape artist.
Right. Yeah.
However, if I did it for enhancing my watch of season two, it would be Brightest Star, Calypso, Runaway, and then escape artist.
Huh. Wait, so what switched between your two lists?
Calypso comes in, Runaway comes in second importance.
Right. Okay.
But Calypso comes in second in enhancement of the season.
Okay, I see.
And really, even
there.
Importance, I could probably in my head flip Calypso and Runaway, because I don't need Runaway.
Okay, so I think importance, I'm putting Runaway is most important, and then the Brightest Star, and then Calypso. We're not even going to rank Escape Artist because
See, now that's interesting, but I think that Brightest Star plays bigger than Tilly's relationship with Poe.
I think in part because we get so much backstory with Saru, way more than we do with Poe. So that little bit that we get with Runaway still does not compare to the amount of screen time that we're talking about Saru. Because we get Saru going through Vahari. Like, I didn't need Brightest Star. So, like, there's so much more to latch onto on screen during season two that, for me, that little bit of Runaway makes that little bit, that scarcity, so much more important to me.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that point. I don't know. I'm still keeping Brightest Star first.
Okay.
I'm not changing my opinion on that one. Like I said, I could even drop Runaway to third, so I could absolutely, in my head, get it to third without even a question of it being okay.
Oh, my God. You can't. No, Calypso has to be third.
I could jump it to second. I absolutely can. For the fact that we end up 950 years in the future, it could be more important than Runaway for me.
Huh. Okay. Well, listeners, please tell us how you would rank the three episodes. I mean, I'm assuming no one's going to put the escape artists as important to season two.
And if you do, please tag me so I can see that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, it's been fun talking about the short treks and how they fit into season two, but it isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Literary Treks.
But in this case, I like the character in the fact that she's a counselor and a Vulcan, because when you go to a counselor, most of the time it's about your emotions or dealing with your emotions. So how ironic it is that a Vulcan is the person you go to figure out how to deal with emotional issues. Mm-hmm. From a non-emotional person.
Earl Grey.
Episodic TV is really good for watching in bed before you go to sleep, because you can go to bed, watch a little 45-minute episode, and by the end, you're almost asleep. So it's like a nice little comfort blanket.
You're saying Star Trek puts you to sleep?
Yeah. Yes. Actually, yes. Even though I love it, it does. If I didn't have it on the background, I probably wouldn't sleep. That becomes so used to.
Interesting. So it's like a soothing presence.
Oh yeah, it's that background noise of life. Star Trek, the hum of the warp drive.
The Ready Room.
Do you feel like there are too many of these arcs, too many of these threads running through a 14 episode season? And I ask that because one of the more interesting stories to me, apart from the Red Angel, the big story, is the Stamets-Culber story. Mm-hmm. And I think that both the actors, Wilson Cruz and Anthony Raup, have done an amazing job of portraying the story. The chemistry between them feels so real, and I've really connected with the emotions behind this story. But I feel shortchanged. I feel like we're only dipping in here and there, mm-hmm. just enough to remind us that that story is going on. Whereas I would like to see it develop more, and I feel like maybe they're just trying to do too much in too little time.
Warp 5.
But I think Brandon's right. You can jump to Bound and have the same thing.
Yeah, you can jump to Bound and have the same thing.
Because you could have him say, I want to leave, them find his replacement, whatever happens in between, now he decides to stay and there's a problem because this guy wants to stay.
Which plays out all in Bound.
Correct. So I think I'm not going to be able to drive Brandon as crazy as I want to. I will say no.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcast. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review.
You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, and most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select The Edge. That will come right to Amy. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Amy, where can people find you when you're not putting dilithium crystals over human life? Or sentient life. Let me do that again.
Well, my goodness. When I'm not doing that, you can find me here on the network co-hosting Earl Grey, which is about Star Trek The Next Generation. I'm also over on the Fandom Podcast on Discoville, that talks about Discovery and the Orville. I am out there in the Twitterverse at Miss Amy Nelson. You can find me there. And I, of course, am in the Babel Conference. So look me up there. Now, Patrick, where can people reach you when you aren't being my brightest star?
Well, I try to do that as often as possible. But when I'm not doing that, you can find me on Twitter at MagicDrop5. You can find me on the network with Brandon, my good friend, doing Warp 5. You can also find me popping up in the Babel Conference. As I told you last or 2 weeks ago, I should soon have another podcast out called Magical Mutterings with Chris Tribuzio. And on weekends, you can find me on Twitch at Magic Drop playing games off my computer system. Probably Apex Legends and Diablo. So if you want to see someone get killed a lot in a game, check me out.
Okay. So sidebar, listeners, some extra content if you're hashtag still listening. So for Earl Grey, we are going to be talking about online computer games, I guess they are. I do not know how to play any
MMOs, they're called.
MMOs. What's that?
Massively multiplayer online.
Oh. Well, I don't know. I think these are like old time computer games.
Yeah.
I don't think they're.
Well, then they're not, but then they wouldn't be online.
Oh, maybe they're just computer games.
Okay. Which games? Do you know?
Oh. Yes, I do. I took notes because I watched some YouTube videos.
About them?
Yes. And watching people play them. I don't know. When you do your MMOs, are you with a keyboard or is it
keyboard and mouse?
There's like every button does something different. This is how do you even remember it all?
W is forward. S is back. A is left. D is right. E picks up items. Shift makes you run. Control makes you crouch. C makes you crouch and stay crouched. Tab, I forget what it does. Alternate does... Z does my special ability. X does my second special ability. G changes to my grenades. H, 4 gives me my health. The left click mouse is to shoot my weapon. The right click mouse is to bring up my optical display so I can see the crosshairs.
Oh my. So you have to be on your keyboard and your mouse?
Yes. In fact, you look left and right, like A and D, depending on the game. Some games they actually physically turn. For this particular game, you look left, right, up, and down with your mouse. You only strafe. Strafe meaning like sidewalk, walk sideways.
Oh, uh-huh.
With A and D.
Huh. Well, I'm just a newfound respect for anyone who can do that because, I mean, like every... I was looking at the controls that they were doing and it's like F1, F2, and yeah, this command and shift and control.
It depends on what games. Different games have different layouts. They all have similar basics, like spacebars almost always jump. WASD is almost always forward, back, left, and right in some fashion. Sometimes it's the actual up, down, left, right keys.
Hmm.
But
wow. Wow. I'm thoroughly impressed. So we I looked at Star Trek Legacy, Armada.
Yeah, those are older computer games. They're not online, I don't believe.
Birth of the Federation.
Yeah, not online.
A Final Unity.
I didn't play that one.
And then there's one more that my paper's on the second page. But yeah, so we're going to be talking about those computer games on Earl Grey. And I was just
like Windows 95 days.
Yeah, they seemed. Yeah, I've got a few remarks about the graphics.
Well, for the time period, they were phenomenal. I mean, you can't look at them now and think that. But
yeah.
For when they came out, they were great. Just having people walk around and not like shake was good.
Yeah.
You know, so what's amazing to me about that is you should have asked me to be on it because I'm a computer game nut. But besides that, when those graphics came out, like you were amazed. Like, wow, it's so lifelike. Now you watch now, you're like, oh my Lord, that looks like a stick figure.
Right, yeah, you know? With the sort of the boxiness.
Yeah, but I can remember going from Nintendo to Super Nintendo and thinking, this is the greatest thing ever. It's 16 bits. Now we have 1080p and 4K.
Right, yeah.
So 8-bit, Nintendo was 8-bit, and we're like, hey, he looks like a real man. That's as close to lifelike as we'll ever get.
Oh my gosh, isn't that crazy? All right, sorry for that side note. I don't even know where we are.
You're at the, if you'd like to help us.
Oh, are you, you're done telling us where we can reach
you? Yes, that's all the places you can reach me.
All right. Well, listeners, if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to each week, including Earl Grey, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd also like to thank our season enhancers, our associate producers, Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Puleo, Lisa Slack, Shoaib Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Millette, Chris Tribuzio, and Brian Malosh. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and The Edge. And I got your name right that time, even though you're not here.
Well, thank you for listening. And join us next time to see what's happening on The Edge of Federation Space.